And good afternoon. It is time for our weekly Lunch and Learn. And today we're going to be talking about colonoscopies and a new study that's just come out. Well, it came out about a year ago. And so this study suggests that colonoscopies may not be all that. So I'm going to give you the research. You can make your own decision. Now, this article was written by a Dr. Zhang. The article does not say where she practices or where she was educated or anything like that. It just says she has 20 years of experience. She's a medical doctor. She's got a PhD as well. She's got 20 years of experience in oncology and healthcare. She works for providers, payers, and pharmaceutical companies. That's all they tell us there. All right, so this is her research or her report on this new research. Now, here in the United States, they recommend that we start getting colonoscopies at about 40 years of age as a preventative from colorectal cancer. Now, in this particular study that we're going to talk about today, we're going to see the sample size that they did, the different countries that they studied, and we're going to compare that to what happens here at the United States. So it's a lot of information, and I was kind of excited about it because, number one, being holistic, while I'm thankful that we've got cancer screening tests and all that kind of thing, I do think they are overused. Here in the United States, our medical system is a for-profit system, whereas in other European countries, medical care is not for-profit. And so because it's not for-profit, they treat you a little bit differently. And so as a personal example, back in the day, I had a UTI and I went to the doctor and it was a gazillion dollars because they took a sample and they tested it and then they did all that kind of stuff and I had to wait a couple of days to figure it out and get antibiotics and all that kind of thing. Few years later, I had moved to Scotland and I had a UTI. I knew what it was and went to the doctor and he said, here, pee on this stick. And he gave me, I could show you. I wasn't going to tell that story, so I wasn't prepared. He gave me one of these little sticks, right? And he said, go pee on the stick. Well, okay. So I went in the bathroom and peed on the stick. And when I came back, he goes, yeah, you have a urine infection. A urinary tract infection, so let me give you this antibiotics. And I kind of looked at him. I think it cost me $2, £2.50, I think. And I said, well, okay, in America, they would have had to take the sample, send it off, have it cultured, and all that kind of stuff. He goes, yeah. He said, we're not a for-profit industry here. And so if you have bacteria in your urine, we know that you've got an infection. So here's your antibiotic. Go and have a nice day, right? So there's just differences in the way people practice medicine. I'm not saying ours is better, ours is worse. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it is not the same. It is different. So here in the United States, we have about 15 million colonoscopies scheduled each year. About 60% are for older people, 50 to 75. They quit doing it here in the United States after you get to be 75. Why is that? Because your tissues start to thin as you get older and there is a higher risk of perforation. There's a higher risk of bleeding. There's just a higher risk of damage to you. So they don't do it when you're over 75. So you've got a 25-year span where they want you to get a colonoscopy every 3 years, every 5 years, every 10 years, depending on what your personal history is and that kind of thing. So 60% of humans here in the United States in that age group have had a colonoscopy in the last 10 years. They're not doing it to find the cancer as much as they're doing it to find the polyps that grow to be cancer, okay? So this is important. We don't want to have polyps in the colon, but if you're moving your bowels like you need to, then stuff doesn't stay in there long enough in order for a polyp to grow. So let me kind of just explain a little bit how this works. when you eat your food, you're supposed to digest all of your nutrients, and all the waste products are supposed to leave your body within 18 to 24 hours. Now, for those people that are chronically constipated, they don't move their bowels every day, two or three times a day. They may move their bowels every other day, every third day. We've had people come in here that don't move their bowels for 3 weeks, 2 weeks. And so chronic constipation is really, really bad. So what happens? Well, when that fecal matter is in the large intestine and you're not moving it, the body sees it as something that it doesn't like. So it will encapsulate it into a polyp to isolate it so it doesn't get any worse. That's the strategy that the body has. Now, the problem with that is if you've got some kind of nastiness in the bowel and it's encapsulated, it's going to keep being nasty and it's going to grow and it's going to morph and it's going to do all those kind of things, which eventually leads to cancer. So we don't want to have polyps, but if you're moving your bowels like you need to, then it's going to be very difficult for stuff to be in there long enough to be encapsulated so that you have that problem. So that's kind of a very detailed description of what goes on. Now, it takes from the size of a polyp, from the beginning of a polyp to actual colon cancer, it takes 10 to 15 years. So kind of think about that. You don't just get cancer overnight. You don't get cancer, at the drop of the hat. It's because you've had nastiness in your body for several years, 10 to 15 years before it turns that way. And we don't want that to happen. And so this is why here in the United States, because we are a for-profit healthcare industry, having routine colonoscopies is big bucks for the doctors and the hospitals and that kind of thing. Now, there was this study. It's called the Nordic European Initiative on Colorectal Cancer. It was published last year in October, and it raised questions about the effectiveness of colonoscopies. The study suggests that colonoscopies do not save as many lives as previously thought. Now, the researchers recruited 84,585 participants from Poland, Norway, and Sweden, and the Netherlands. 28,000 of them were in the invited group. We invite you to go and take a colonoscopy. All right. The rest, the 56,365, were in the usual care group. Okay. Now, they don't tell us whether they had colonoscopies or not. They just were not invited to have a colonoscopy. Now, in Europe, they don't really do colonoscopies as part of their regular health care. They do something called I wrote it down because I'm not going to be able to say it if I don't get to read it. So I'll get to that in just a minute, okay? So at the end of the 10-year follow-up, the risk of colorectal cancers and related deaths at 10 years was 0.28% in the participants in the invited group and 0.31% in the usual care group. The risk of death from any cause was 11% in the invited group, 11.03% in the invited group and 11.04% in the usual care group. So not much difference at all. In terms of adverse events, 15 people had major bleeding after the polyp removal, and according to the study, there were no screen-related deaths, and nobody died for at least 30 days after getting the colonoscopy, okay? The incidence of colon cancer has dropped significantly since 1975. Most people believe that is due to the increased screening and improved treatment, but there was no randomized clinical trials on colonoscopies before this one last year in October. All right. So this Nordic trial has sparked heated discussion. Can colonoscopies truly prevent cancer? If the benefit isn't what people have expected, then colon cancer screening landscape could be totally reshaped. Now, numerous doctors argue that the Nordic trial, the researchers should maintain follow-ups on their study. They don't think that 10 years was enough. They want to keep going, and they want to assess other risk factors as well, okay? Follow-up time is very important, as many believe that a colonoscopy benefit is in the treatment of the precancerous polyps. it may be decades before we see long-term benefits of colonoscopy screenings, all right? So the first issue that the doctors have with this new research is that the trial had lower than anticipated participation. That means only 42% of the invited people underwent a colonoscopy, and it provides no information on adherence to guidelines or anything like that. Most people think that the study does not change the value of the colonoscopies. The test would have lowered the cancer risk by 31% and cut the probability of dying by 50% if compliance had been 100%. We don't know what the compliance was. So just to give you some statistics to kind of compare. So this was a European, okay, Poland, Norway, Netherlands, Sweden. We're going to compare that to the United States. So in Poland, this is per 100,000, right? Per 100,000 in Poland, 29 had colon cancer. 14 died from that, okay? In Norway, 30 out of per 100,000, 39.1, okay? Netherlands, 38. Sweden, 26. Here in the United States, where we have all of this testing, we are the lowest at 24. But 24 does not significantly differ from 29, which is the highest incidence of colon cancer. So you're going to have to make that decision. Is this test beneficial for you? Is it going to help you as much as you've been told it's going to help you? All right. In the other countries that don't do colonoscopies, they do the sigmoidoscopy, all right? That's a word I have to look at because it's just not part of my regular vocabulary, all right? It only examines the lower part of the colon. You don't have to be sedated and that kind of thing. Here in America, you have to be sedated, you have to go to the hospital, you have to do the prep, all that kind of stuff. And so in Europe, they don't do that as a general part of their healthcare system. However, the report goes on to say that countries that have no screening whatsoever still witnessed improvements in colon cancer mortality. A comment on the findings was published in the Lancet Oncology Journal, stating that firm conclusions cannot yet be drawn on the causal relationship between cancer, colon cancer mortality, and national screenings. Now, this is important because you have one country here in the United States where we're all about the testing, right? And then you've got four other European countries where they don't do that. And then you've got other countries that they don't even list what countries they are. I did not read that article in The Lancet, but those countries don't do any kind of screening, and yet they're having better outcomes as well. So is that because we're more educated? Is that because we know we need to move our bowels? Is that because we're more educated on supplements and making sure that we're digesting and making sure that we do liver cleanses and that kind of thing? The research is just not there. The data is just not there to prove that. What we do know is that in the United States, with our for-profit system, right, we've got the lowest incidence of colorectal cancer at 26.6. The highest was 29.0. There's not that big of a difference. So that's leading the doctors to say, are these tests even necessary? So that's something that we need to kind of figure out. The other thing that they found is that when you go and have a colonoscopy, the benefit is highly correlated to the experience of the operator that's doing the colonoscopy, okay? The adenoma detection rate is a percentage of screening colonoscopies in which one or more adenomas are found. Patients are better protected from adenoma development by endoscopists with higher adenoma detection rates. So what this tells me is they take a little camera and they kind of snake up through the intestines to see what's going on. If the operator doesn't know what they're looking for, then they could miss something very significant. The people that know what they're looking for, that have the highest rate of detection, I don't know if they're more comfortable, if they're more diligent, if they can get in those nooks and crannies better than somebody else that just doesn't do that. But the statistics show that the more experienced, positively experienced operator you have, then the better or the more benefits that a colonoscopy is going to have for you. American doctors have a problem with this study because it was done in Europe that doesn't have the same various demographics that we have here in the United States. So there were a lot of different things that people had problems with. The benefits and risk depend on compliance with the screening protocol and the chance of meeting an experienced endoscopist and your own risk for the development of colon cancer. Now, we hope that nobody develops colon cancer or cancer of any kind. We just don't think that that's something that we should be doing. And I'm sure everybody will agree with that. The reason that people develop cancer and the reason that cancer rates have skyrocketed in the past 50 years is because of our contaminated food supply, our contaminated environment, and we just don't take care of ourselves. We've talked about this before. We've talked about the if you're overweight, you're if you're overweight, you are twice as likely to develop diabetes. And if you develop diabetes, you're four times more likely to have cancer of any kind. And so all we have to do is look around, and we know that we are pretty plumptious here in the United States, okay? People are heavy. The portions that we get at the restaurants are quite large. I very rarely ever finish a meal, and usually it's enough for two. And so, this is just part of our culture, part of the way we live. We eat foods that are not foods. I remember when we came back, my late husband and I lived in England, and we came back to the United States in the early 90s. And Snackwell cookies were all the rage, right? And I am a chocolate girl for sure and enjoy that. And those cookies, I'm not beating them up, okay? There are other brands as well, but this is my experience. We came home and we had these Snackwell fat-free cookies. And so I thought, oh, well, this is good. And they tasted good. And I was enjoying them. And then when I moved from education into the healthcare field, and I started looking at the ingredients there and found that, oh my goodness, there's very little real food in that food, okay? And this is what we find when we buy any kind of food in a box or a package, right? It's got very little nutrient in there. The nutrient density is very, very low. And so when we are eating those foods, and yes, they taste good. I mean, I was talking to a lady yesterday, and she was saying that she was eating imitation crab meat. And I said, don't do that. That's not real food. And she said, but it tastes so good. I said, yeah, they formulate it that way, and they produce it that way. But if you actually saw how it was produced, it's absolutely disgusting. And you can YouTube it. You can Google it. It is absolutely disgusting. But this is what we here in the United States are dealing with our food supply, and maybe where you are as well. You've got these foods that are not foods, and so you want to stick to a whole food diet as much as possible. Make sure that you're digesting your food and eliminating the waste, and then you're going to spare yourself a lot of immune issues, cancer issues, all that kind of thing, if you just take care of what you put in your mouth. Yes, it's convenient to buy something in a package. Yes, it's convenient to have a box and you just add your ground meat or whatever, but it's not healthy. And if we want to stay cancer-free, if we want to be able to live our best life, then we want to be able to do that by making the right choices, all right? So a person with a family history of colorectal cancer might be better served, okay, by keeping a close look on their healthy diet. So we can rely on screenings. We're glad we have screenings. Nobody's saying anything ugly about the screenings, okay? If we are diligent about our food, if we're mindful about what we put into our bodies, then we're not going to have to be worried about those kind of things, all right? Here are some kind of risky statistics here. A first degree relative of people with colorectal cancer are at a six-fold increase of colon cancer before they reach 50 years old. Second and third degree relatives correspond to a 1.5 to 3 times increased risk, okay, or a 2-fold increased risk of colorectal cancer. Doctors may determine that if you are at high risk, you would have colonoscopies more often to remove any of the precancerous polyps. And you're going to have to make a decision if that's something that you want to do, if you want to have that peace of mind, or if you're going to trust your body. You know, everybody has different ideas on that. But your risk, there is a significantly higher risk of getting colorectal cancer before you're 50 if you have a first degree relative that has that, all right? If you have inflammatory bowel disease, your incidence of colorectal cancer is going to be higher. So we do see a lot of that here in the clinic. We see a lot of IBS, a lot of Crohn's, a lot of ulcerative colitis. It goes by various different names. But what happens when that is presented is that these particular intestines, right, they're ulcerated because they've got bacteria, they've got fungus, they've got whatever they've got in there, and the body is trying to heal. The mucus in the layer of mucus on the inside of the GI tract just gets eaten away by these pathogens. And so if you don't deal with the pathogens, then you're not going to be healthy. So as with anything in holistic medicine, right, we try and find the cause, because if we find the cause, we can deal with the cause, and then the body restores itself and the body does what it needs to do. And that's what we want. We want the body to be able to heal. We want the body to be able to be restored in a natural and healthy way. It says colonoscopies are still considered the gold standard if cancer is suspected in a patient. So if someone thinks they have cancer, then the doctors are always going to recommend a colonoscopy to see what it is, all right? It will benefit the patients most if a cancer is found and removed in the adenocarcinoma sequence, which is the development of the cancerous change from the adenoma to the full-blown cancer. So you can Google that. You can look at that. There's all kinds of pictures on what a polyp looks like, what it looks like at 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, up until 10 to 15 years. So it just grows. It's slow growing. It's not something that grows fast in most cases. And so, you know, if that's something, if you're having any kind of bowel issues, if you've got cancer in your family, then a colonoscopy might be the right thing for you. But what this report is saying, that it may not have that big of a benefit for most people that don't have colon cancer in their family. All right. The prognosis of patients with colorectal cancer varies according to the site of the cancer, with right-sided tumors having the most severe prognosis, making an early detection in this group of patients especially important. However, there are risks with colonoscopies. All right. The risk of colonoscopies includes major bleeding, perforation. Now that's when the little scope with the camera, because that's what they're doing. They're going up your backside with a camera, with a light. They're looking at the inside of your colon, trying to see if there's anything suspicious in there. So sometimes if we're not well, if our tissues are fragile, then that little scope can perforate, and then you've got a world of trouble. And that's my main concern with a colonoscopy, is that the risk of perforation is just it's a big risk, because if they perforate that bowel wall, then all of the fecal matter is going to get into your system, and you're going to have some big time trouble. So that's my main concern about colonoscopies. And then also there is infection just from the procedure itself. These rates are higher in colonoscopies than as sigmoidectomies, which are less expensive. Sigmoidectomies are less expensive, less invasive, and are performed without sedation. All right. colonoscopy is more invasive and burdensome than any other colon cancer test, such as fecal testing, all right? So, what is fecal testing? Now, if you're here in the United States and you watch commercial television, you will see a little box on a commercial that comes out and says, I want to test I don't know what does it say. It's been a long time since I've seen it. But it's a little box comes out on legs, and it says, you want to do your cancer screening. You put a sample in me, and we mail me off to the doctor, and you get your results, right? So this is DNA testing of your stool, which that you take it at home. There's no sedation. There's no invasive procedure. And you put it in the box, and you mail it to your doctor, and they test it to see if there is any kind of bacteria or pathogen in there that would lead them to believe that you have colon cancer. It goes on to say that this particular kind of testing, number one, it's very inexpensive because there's no medical personnel involved, right? It's much more easy to get compliance because you do it in the privacy of your own bathroom, not in a hospital setting and that kind of thing. So for that reason, people are turning more toward that. And so that's kind of an interesting thing that we have that option. We have that opportunity. I think that that would be a first choice rather than going through the whole prep and all that with the colonoscopies, especially since the difference percentage-wise is 0.21% to 0.31%, all right? And so those are kind of a thing that you want to talk about, all right? Medical organizations here in the United States have dropped the recommended age of colorectal cancer to 45 from 50, and the reason is that they're trying to decide what the bowel looks like before the polyps start to form, all right? They're saying and they're suggesting that poor diet, especially one in highly processed meats, fats, low in fruits and vegetables, is increasingly linked to early onset colorectal cancer. So here we have it again, that we are what we eat. Right? So if we eat garbage food, if we eat foods that are not foods, then we're going to set our bodies up to have sickness and disease. If we're mindful about what we eat and we eat a healthy diet, then we're going to reap that benefit because we have more nutritionally dense foods, so we've got more nutrients to repair and to resolve issues that are in there. All right? Colorectal cancer is relatively rare, affecting less than 1.8 per 100,000 younger adults below the age of 40. So lowering the screening age might be a burden and not cost effective. So this doctor is saying there's really no data to support that people younger than 45 have this test, all right? In addition, the trend of new young patients might be because of early screening overdiagnosis, which further burdens the process. And so this doctor is saying, because we do these tests, we are overdiagnosing, right? Now, I've heard this before. I've read this before in all of our testing. Because we have much higher abilities, whether that's through sonar or imaging or whatever, we can see things that are microscopic, and so we go out and we get them before they become anything nasty, and they may not have been going to become anything nasty anyway. We just don't know because we're over anxious and we're just doing too much testing and taking care of things that might not be a problem. There's a long process of colon cancer development. If the in situ cancer is identified very early, the 5-year survival rate may improve, but no one can really tell how long it takes for a cancer cell to grow into something lethal, and there are other risks to consider as well. Deciding whether it's cost-effective to do a colonoscopy will be based on your own risk of developing colorectal cancer, depending on your family history and other risk factors. So, if you are obese, you have a higher risk factor. If you have diabetes, that even raises your factor more, okay? So, think about who you are, think about what your challenges are, and you may find that a colonoscopy is something that you need to do. If you're not overweight, if you don't have any kind of chronic disease, like my family, right? Not overweight, don't have a chronic disease, all that kind of stuff, we're at very, very low risk. And so look at yourself, and if you need to do these tests, then thank God we've got these tests. But if you don't need to do that test, then you might want to think, you just get to make the choice, okay? We need better data on the colonoscopy's benefits and risk to account for comorbidities, oncological treatments, stage-related differences at the time of diagnosis, family history, and other risk factors. Additional in-depth patient-level data are required, all right? Ideally, whenever your doctor would see you and talk to you, he would say, oh, Mrs. Smith, you're good. Your obesity is not there. There's no chronic disease. There's no autoimmune disease. You have a very, very low risk. And so we're just going to, you know, see what's going on. Or, Mrs. Smith, you've got a little bit of extra, you know, weight here in your type 2 diabetes, and you've got these autoimmune conditions, so you're at a higher risk. So I suggest we go ahead and get this screening. So ideally, that's what medical treatment should look like, not, oh, you're 45, let's go get a colonoscopy. All right? So it's different in other countries that don't have a for-profit model in their healthcare. But as you can see with the statistics that I just read, right, in Poland, 29, Norway, 39, Netherlands, 38, United States, 24. There's not that big of a difference between a country that overdoes screening, that screens just about everybody, and a country or four countries that don't do a lot of screening. So that's a lot of information. That's a lot of things for you to digest. Do your own research, right, and work out what's best for you and your family. So I will talk to you again next Friday. Thank you for commenting. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for liking. Thank you for all the things. Facebook loves it when that happens. And so I appreciate all the love. So take care. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.